weird.
Yeah, I don't think you are the expert on who they are.
No, that's definitely true. I think someone needs to leave the house slightly more often than I do in order to find out who they are. I remember Michael Douglas was really trying to find out who they were in The Game.
That he was. He was. And, you know, the end of it, we still don't know.
Yeah. We still don't. I mean, is that company still out there doing these expensive games for you know, rich, affluent people with more money than sense? Probably.
Probably, but we wouldn't know. We're definitely not in that tax bracket.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm not even let into the same building as people in that tax bracket. They're like, definitely, they bring down the velvet rope right when I get up there. And they're No. We could tell just by looking at you. You're not upper crust material. Now skitter along back to your trash hovel.
Yeah, but at least you know where those people congregate. I've been kicked out of escape rooms, so.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, look,
take
I figure
it too
there's,
long?
No, I figure there's no puzzle you can't solve with a little bit of fire.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you're setting the place on fire.
I'm setting the clues on fire, and if they happen to make them ramshackled, then it might set the place on fire.
I see.
Yeah.
You just get that glint in your eye, and everyone with you is like, oh, no.
No, he's going to do it again.
A flick, a spark doth light the way. A clue to burn on this good day. No, John, it doesn't say that anywhere.
We haven't even signed the waivers. It's a part of the game. And you're like, why you got that old flint and stone? It's better this way. I just hate puzzles.
Star Trek, saga, now everybody get your Klingon, talking about Star Trek, having so much fun, ay, hosted by Forrest and John, this is Star Trek, saga, so if you ready, hop inside the Enterprise, Jayco, let's go, going on a ride, live long and prosper, yeah, that's right, this is Star Trek, saga, come on, Star Trek, saga.
Greetings. Cosmic wanderers to another thrilling voyage through the cosmos with Pop Saga, the podcast that fearlessly explores the galaxies of pop culture. Today, we've set a course for an analysis of a gem from the Star Trek universe, Season 2, Episode 18 of Star Trek Enterprise, The Crossing. As the familiar strains of our theme song signal, we're diving into the intricacies of another Enterprise installment. Leading the charge is yours truly, John. The adventurer, red short explorer, who's ready to swap lives with the Wisp in a moment's notice. And of course, by my side is Forrest, who never lets me forget the importance of hitting warp as soon as a ship appears behind us. I also attended a Star Trek convention, and I'm sure Forrest has a ton of questions, like, did I see Jerry Ryan? How tall is Q? And of course, the most important question of all, did I participate in the auction? So, fellow Pop Saga travelers, brace yourselves as we engage our imaginations, set the medical tricorder to analyze the funny bone, and boldly go where Pop Saga has ventured before. That's it. Done it in one.
Punch it, Chewie.
Punch it.
I'm home. That classic Star Trek line that everyone's saying to this day.
Yeah, we do quote that a lot.
That's right. Punch it, Chewie. I'm home.
Punch it, Chewie. Classic. I'm home. Home on the space.
Whoa. Hello. Is this our musical episode? Guess what? It's not. Yeah, it's not.
It's not at all.
I think you could say probably convincingly that every episode might be our musical episode, but not this one.
Not this one. I wonder if there's a point where we should just have an episode where we just bust into song for everything. Just write some novelty songs, you know?
Yeah. That will
more so than we already do, anyway.
Could you imagine how many people we would lose for an episode like that? Gee, golly. We'd go from like 20 people listening every week to, I don't know, zero.
No, I don't know. I bet you there's some people who would be like, you know what? I'd like to hear that.
Maybe it would be our very first review because someone is just like, I have to tell people how bad this is. So they never watch it. They never listen to it. Yeah, maybe.
Hey, yeah, maybe that's how we get more followers.
Yeah.
We'd be like, though, you want to watch a podcast crash and burn in real time? Listen to this episode.
Yeah, this is one's a dumpster fire and not even on purpose.
Their other stuff's pretty good, but this stuff is terrible. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. You know, speaking of our other stuff, I'm missing Dear Skeletor already. Hey, yeah. Hey, Kevin Smith, where's my more He-Man?
I don't know. It's wherever Dogma is, I guess.
Ooh, straight to hell, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I do admit I miss the, it was a little rusty trying to write an intro. It was kind of nice just, you know, reading the Dear Skeletor stuff. That was cool.
And, hey, consistency is good, you know?
Yeah, but, you know.
Nice to know what to expect and when to expect it. I just want to talk about more He-Man guest stars. Yeah, when are we going to get that some more? I want to see the spinoff all about Snoutsprout. And I'll never pronounce the name right, and maybe it's on purpose now.
It is.
But it's not. No, it's a complete accident every time. But I have to say, I looked up my, my recent purchase, my Donatello Turtle at Arms.
Yeah.
He-Man crossover. I've been getting a lot more. I've been getting a lot more sort of Reddit suggested communities about the toys, and I have to say, everyone's this good old Snout Spout.
They're pissed.
It's just the talk of the town is all. Everyone's it trying is. To get their hands on a darn Snout Spout.
No, you are correct, and those who could are very happy, but most of those could not. And those people are pissed.
It's a bummer.
It's a bummer.
People want this crazy this weirdo with the we still don't know where the water's coming from, but this is a sought after figure.
That is. I mean, we never saw him reload once.
Not once. That is a bodily fluid.
Yep.
And we can only hope it's spit.
Yeah, I mean, we would really hope that it was just water, and oh my God, just he'd be the most terrifying person out there, even worse than Stinkor, if he was just like hawking super loogies at you. Like if he could like literally spit at you, but like at a volume in like gallons, that's terrifying. Ooh,
yeah, seriously.
Ooh.
Ooh. Wait a minute, time out. Did you just spit on me?
It's over. I'm out of here. You
win. I didn't sign up for this. Jason out. And that's a little callback. It's a little callback for those of you who actually listen to all of our Dear Skeletor episodes. There you go. John, one thing that Dear Skeletor did not have, but that we have here.
Oh, yeah.
At our main mothership podcast, Pop Saga, is the classic segment, the only reason anybody tunes in to this aforementioned dumpster fire. That's right. What are you enjoying this evening, John? Why don't you kick us off?
Okay, well, I am. So I've kept the beers of the world that I received as a present for Christmas as a... for when we return to the pop of the saga. And so this one is the Uni Brew from Chambly, Quebec, I guess, QC. It's called Blanche de Chambly. It's a Belgian-style wheat ale. And ale brewed with coriander and orange peel.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it does have... How you feel about beer that has just floating shit in it?
It depends. If it has like, if it's a cloudy beer with a little sediment, I don't mind that. Depending on the type of beer it is. But if it's just got random stuff in it, you know, maybe like, I don't know, a washer, a part of a sock. Like, that could be a problem.
Yeah. I think I got the soccer.
Washer combo.
Oh.
You got. Oh.
Oh.
It sounds viscous.
It's a little. Well, I mean, God, I want to send you some pictures of the bottom of this glass because it is. I shouldn't have taken a sip out of it. I think I've just given myself dysentery or something.
Ah, yes. Sorry, good sir. The beer has turned.
All right. That was a very uncomfortable picture to take. It tastes like pain.
Oh.
Pain.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, I don't. I can taste the hint of orange peel and coriander, I think, and maybe some sort of sepsis. There you go. I just sent you the thing through a Discord.
Oh, sepsis. Oh, yeah, that is a lot of sediment. Though that's when you know that's a cloudy brew and probably real good.
Yeah, it's
but it's a little
good.
Unsettling to have a little hunk of chunks at the bottom of your beverage. I agree.
Yeah, but it's no real aftertaste. Little tart, but not a lot, and I think that might just come from the orange peel, like the pith or whatever.
Sure.
It's eh. I think on second sip, it's not that bad, but I don't know if I'd go back to this. Yeah, Blanchard to Chambly. No Chambly, thank you.
No chance for you, Chambly.
Yeah, so that's what I had, and I'll probably just swap over to water. What are you enjoying this
wow.
evening?
The ultimate condemnation. Well, I have here a tried and true classic of the the bottom of the barrel substrates of beers. That's right, they were out of my number one pick, Modelo Oro, and so instead, I've got a Bud Light. That's right. That's because the only other thing I had were IPAs, and I'm sick of pretending that I like them. So we're going back to the classic macro brew, constantly ranked as the top in terms of taste in the light beer macro brew category, Bud Light. This time with a little bit of lime. Bud Light.
All right. Mm.
That's right. Yeah. It tastes like water and hops and barley, but only if you told water about those things and it imagined it, and then you drank it, and somehow it took on some of the effects of the things that it thought about in its head, and then you drank it up, and it was had alcohol in it for some reason, but it's mostly just some piss water.
Fooled you, folks. This is our musical episode.
That's the key. When you have a musical, you have to pretend like it's not a musical. That's part of what
that's
makes
true.
It
that
so
is the
special.
Charm. That is the charm. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of wishing I had a Bud Light. So
well, there you go.
Win this time.
It you is, you know, it's a refreshing, crushable, quote unquote, beer.
That's what you need.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't, you know, sometimes you want alcohol-infused water and you don't want a White Claw, and what do? When that happens, you reach for yourself for that can of blue. You know what I mean?
Sure, I thought you were going to be like, I reach for the White Claw that doesn't have booze in it, but costs the same price.
Nope, that sounds ridiculous. Like, I know it's a thing, but I don't believe it.
I don't want to.
I love how they say on this, they're like, brewed using the choicest hops, best barley malt, and rice. And you're like, wait, what? Wait, excuse me? Is that a thing that we're looking for in beer? I'm confused.
Wait, you do choicest hops.
That's right.
Freshest barley?
Let's see. The choicest hops, the best barley malt, and rice.
Yeah, where's the and fantastic rice? Like,
yeah.
If you're just gonna do two out of three, I'm feeling like, wait, are you shortchanging me on the rice?
Maybe. I mean, adjunct logger, they have to, like, that's where they get all their savings from. That's how they're able to deliver a superior quality light beer at a price that everyone can afford. Bud Light. Remember the Clydesdales.
Yeah. The ones in the commercials, most likely not alive.
Wow. It's one of those days. Don't take it personal, Bud Light. That's right. More of our beautiful musical episode.
I knew it.
So, before we jump into this episode that is, it's a doozy, let's talk a little bit about what you mentioned during your beautiful intro. That's right. John's trip to a Star Trek convention. So, as you hinted at it, I'm just brimming with questions, John. First off, did you meet Jerry Ryan?
No.
Did you see Jerry Ryan?
No. I went looking.
I don't care.
Didn't
all
get
questions,
anywhere.
Yeah. Questions
all other logical questions are drawn, right? Yeah, of course. So this is a Star Trek convention that hasn't been at this hotel for like a few years. It returned, done by the Creation Con people, who were really big like in the 80s and 90s and just kind of like, I don't know, I guess we're there, but you know, I was then going to, you know, Comic Cons and everything else. So I didn't really hear about Creation Cons. It was at the lovely Hyatt in Burlingame, California. I went with my buddy Jeff, who's a longtime Star Trek fan, so much so that he became an actual rocket scientist. So
because of Star Trek?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, partly. I think he was just really fascinated with space too, but Star Trek really helped. So we decided to go check it out. And yeah, we saw all the sights that you could see at the Hyatt in Burlingame. They had what you want to know? What do you want to know? Where do you want me to take you?
Let's just start at the start. Walk me through the whole thing. I'd love to hear about your whole experience. Who did you meet? What did you buy? What was the vibe? Did you see any cool costumes? I mean, really, just give me the whole breakdown.
All right. So, I did. I met one star because all the other ones did not show up during the time there. I guess they were. I think daylight savings time was just a killer for most of them to get down to like the signing room. So the convention was broken into three spots. They had a dealer's closet. Because I wouldn't go as far as calling it a room. They had the signing area, and then they had the little auditorium where you could listen to panels and stuff. Me being who I am when I go to conventions, I was like, I'm gonna hit the dealer's room first, get all my spending out the way, then go see what else the thing has to offer. So when I did my lap. I wouldn't call it a lap because this room was very small, and it's my first. It's my first of many complaints.
You're really selling this con.
I walked in there. There probably weren't even a dozen tables, which to me is a condemnation on the fact that like Star Wars' merchandising game is so strong and Star Trek's is so weak, weak, like. Because normally what I'm looking for are like little like models of the ships and things that I can kind of put around my office just because, you know, I really dig that stuff or see what they had. They had none of that at all. In fact, there was one table guy was selling like a bunch of props and he had some phasers and stuff. But then it went into Babylon 5 territory real quick and then Logan's Run. And I'm like, and those were front and center.
Logan's Run. Yeah. This is one of the real gems that tells you if you're too old.
I wish it was that. It was the little Sandman pistol or something, if I remember. Okay. Like the weird gun. And then they had the other weird, and then they had the PPG from Babylon 5. And he was just like, yeah. I was like, this table sucks. And then they had a officially licensed Star Trek booze section. that you can buy. You can go online and buy them if you want.
Ooh, so like a Chateau Picard?
Exactly. And they had a... They had that too. And they had two versions of that. They had like Romulan ale that was like vodka. Then they had the other one that was like whiskey or something in it.
Okay. Now, did they have... did they have that classic Cardassian liquor?
They did. The Kondar or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they had it in the bottle, and they even had a little box that it can go in. And then the guy's selling point for me was, after you drink the wine that's in it, you can use it as a decanter. And I was like, what am I going to decant in that little tiny bottle?
So like, wait a minute. It was just wine?
It was a blend of three wines.
Oh, come on. Kondar is not wine. Star Trek fans. I mean, it is shown to be viscous.
Nope. It definitely was wine. It was, I think, a Petit Syrah, a Pinot Grigio, and one other one that I've actually never heard of, a varietal I've never heard of, so he just might have made it up. But yeah, so they had that, and they wanted about $175 for it. And the thing is, I could have given them my money, but then I would have to wait for it to get delivered to me anyway. So I was just like, oh, if I really want it, I'll just order it later. So
that's disappointing.
Yeah, but the bottles were like shaped like the bottles and things when they had a chance, and the Chateau Picard. They had a couple of ones and a couple different versions of the bottles, even one with like a metal plate on it. And it was like, bam, 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 metal, like pretty badass. Okay. Cool. But after the show, it made me seem like I wouldn't want to drink it because it's bad wine. You know, kind of given what everyone responds to it. I was just like, I don't want that Picard blend. It's just probably made out of sadness and Borg parts or something. I don't know.
Is that really? Yeah. You know, he had the vineyards before he was a Starfleet captain, right? That's a family thing.
Sure, but maybe they've lasted for years, so it was either because they're very good or very bad, but just have a lot of money. I'm going with the latter.
Okay.
Yeah. But then they had a custom-built Borg PC computers, which is just foreshadowing of something that you don't want.
Yeah, something tells me those aren't the ones that'll do it. You know what I mean? Those aren't the ones you got to be scared of. I'm sure you'll be like, oh, geez, this graphics card could be better.
Yeah, exactly. It's all of a sudden I wake up and there's a tubule in my neck. My GPU's trying to hijack my brain. No, thank you. It'd be kind of like going like, I don't know. I'm going to buy this computer. It's from this up-and-coming company called Cyberdyne. I'm sure it's fine. It's got the Skynet OS. Nah, I ain't doing that. But they look pretty cool.
Yeah, at least the Cyberdyne one would be fast, though.
Yeah, definitely. Not that Borg shit. But it could adapt, and I guess that's cool. There was a booth that just had a bunch of random shit. It literally looked like the guy went through his office and just took everything off and just said, I'll throw this on a table and sell it. And it was the one booth that had a bunch of lightsabers, so you know it was very authentic.
Okay, how was he doing though? Doing good, doing good foot traffic?
Nope.
Well,
and people would walk by. And then there are a couple people selling their books, so that's what I bought. I bought some books for Tanya because I thought the subject matter seemed pretty good, and cool. I wanted to buy some T-shirts because for the dude who owns a lot of Star Trek T-shirts. Or Star Wars T-shirts. I don't own any Star Trek T-shirts. Yeah. So I was like, well, let me buy one. Forrest, let me tell you something. Okay. I'm not accusing Paramount of doing anything or this Seems convention like of doing to, anything okay. at all. I'm not accusing them of this. But I felt like they were pressing and printing these things in the back somewhere. Like these T-shirts are not nearly the quality of even our Pop Saga T-shirts from T Public.
One I have from there is completely just a red shirt now.
Not mine. Mine all look good. I don't know how you washing your shirts. Stop washing them in Bud Light. Bud Light. Not meant for washing.
Bud Light. It'll take all the decals off of your clothes.
But I mean, real talk. Like they look like they were made for the movie, for the set that day, and they didn't have to pass much scrutiny. So I couldn't pull the trigger because also they didn't have my size.
Wow, this is just a big. This actually seems like a very disappointing experience, John, I have to say.
Oh, am I making it sound that way? I didn't mean to.
No. I guess that's just how it comes off.
Then I went to this other shitty boot. No. And then there was someone selling custom Star Trek clothes that were all like pseudo like Uniqlo or, you know, like other jackets. Okay.
That's at least interesting.
Yeah. And then that was it.
Wow.
Everything I mentioned was everything that was there.
Wow. That's unfortunate. But you did, I saw pictured evidence of this. You did meet a pretty big deal in the old Star Trek continuity.
Oh, is he in Star Trek? I just remember him from Master Universe Revolution. Yeah, no, I took a picture with Q himself, John DeLancey.
That's right, the Granimir himself.
Yeah, and he wrote, and so yeah, Granimir himself. We took a nice selfie, and I got his autograph on a real cool Q thing, and it says, "John, the trial never ends."
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I love it. I love it when you go to a signing and the person you're there to see, just they're like, I know exactly the thing that I can write that will make your day. And that's awesome. Way to go. It sounds like a real nice guy.
Yeah, he was nice. You know, like, I mean, he was doing his racket and I was happy for him. You know, that's my favorite thing about going to the cons and just kind of seeing like how they set up everything or whatever. But he was a real cool cat. I was surprised that he was taller than me. That weirded me out.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's a tall drink of water, that cute.
It's so hard to tell because, you know, like, I've never seen Patrick Stewart in person. I've seen, like, Jonathan Franks. He's pretty tall and stuff. But, yeah, that cute. I was like, shit, I have to kind of look up to him. And I'm like, oh. But he was very nice, and that was a cool thing. Then the room did start filling up with the other stars, but it was so packed with everyone lined up that I couldn't kind of make my way over to get other autographs. Like, who was there? A couple of people from Lower Decks. Tawny Newton.
Tawny Newsom?
Yeah. Thank you. She was there.
Oh, my God. You saw That's awesome.
That was just, but she, that section, I wish I didn't take a picture of that section. It was just packed with so much flesh, much human flesh in the corner.
Okay. So it's a weird way to describe it, but yeah,
an amorphous mass of just different Starfleet uniforms kind of conjoining into a Kira like Tetsuo after like he goes crazy blob. Was just kind of right there. And so I was just like,
now,
you know what?
I thought you said Kira, but of course you didn't. And you're talking about amorphous blobs. Quark.
Quark was not there.
Oh. I gotta keep my eye on that one. That's Armin Shimmerman did not make the trip, huh? But who else did you hear tell of? Tawny, I'm still reeling from this Tawny Newsom bombshell.
That was the thing. Okay, like I will say this for the convention. It punched, in terms of star power for Star Trek, it punched well above its location's weight.
Wow.
For example, who else was there? Jake Sisko?
Sirach Lofton?
Yep.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
Don Lewis, who's the voice of Captain Carol Freeman from Lower Decks.
Yep, awesome.
Neelix, so I just left that section completely.
What?
Yep. Eugene.
Neelix was there?
Yeah. Eugene Cordero?
Eugene Cordero? What the hell? You were kidding.
No, it was like Jeri Ryan was there. I mentioned that.
But you didn't see her.
I did not see her at all. It was just like they were just keeping her hidden or something.
Dream.
Yeah. Max Grodnicek, Rom from Deep Space Nine. So I was ready for that. That was hot.
That's incredible. Did you meet him?
He wasn't there. These tables were just empty, but they were there. Then when I went back, the tables were still empty. So I don't know if they were like, who took the money and run or something. I don't know, but they just went there each time I kind of bust through. But Melissa Neve from Strange New Worlds.
Incredible. That's
Ortega's, yep.
Yeah, of course.
Robert Picardo.
The doctor. Oh, hello.
Yep, Michelle
Hurd. Can I get your autograph? Jesus, dude. You weren't kidding.
No, Todd Stashwick. You remember him from Picard?
Of course.
Terry Metalis, the showrunner. His line was too long, so I couldn't get to him. And then, John DeLancey, Jerry Ryan, as we mentioned. Gates McFadden,
talk about burying the lead.
Well, I'm trying to kind of go into the royalty. Dominic Keaton, Malcolm Reed from Enterprise himself, and Connor Trinneer. So Trip and Malcolm were both here, at their tables. Yeah, because I was going to do this whole thing where I was going to try to get their autographs and stuff, and then do a prize or something for listeners.
But you did.
Well, I have the photos, but they never showed up. So I bought the photos for them to sign. So I got those, I guess, I can give away.
But you could have gotten Ethan Phillips' autograph, but did not.
Well, it's Neelix.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah, it's Neelix, though. But it's just Neelix. And the two that I wanted to, and one table was two-pack, the other one was not there. Jeffrey Combs.
Of course. Oh, my God. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, he unfortunately, every time I went by the room, he was never there. And Brent Spiner.
Oh, my God, Brent Spiner was there. I love doing Independence Day.
Well, I
do the bit where you get smashed up against the glass.
No, the worst part is, like, when I saw him there, I was like, fuck, I really wish I had a photo from his character in Night Court. And that would be the thing I want him to sign for me.
I think he just made a triumphant return to Night Court recently in the reboot.
He did. And so that was the stars.
Wow, and didn't get a chance to see any one of them except John DeLancey. I mean, John DeLancey is like seeing five stars, so that's no slouch. But
I felt pretty
good. No, Robert Picardo. Mm-mm.
No, he. I think he showed up afterwards, but at that point, that room was so packed, I was just like, I can't do it anymore.
Well, I have to tell, if Ethan Phillips, if you're listening, I would have been first in line. I would have brought a couple of Neelix's, the grody feet that they have on that one episode where they give him a foot massage. I would have taken those prosthetic grody feet and I would have had you sign them all. And then I would have given each toe a little kiss. And that is a promise from me to you. Of the prosthetic, not the real Ethan Phillips does not deserve this kind of harassment. Yeah, but Ethan Phillips, I mean, Neelix is a character that starts off real bad, but through the performance of Ethan Phillips, you grow to like Neelix.
I think you said it right with your initial thing. Neelix is a character, and that's where I'm going to leave it. but I mean, the room was pretty small, but yeah, so I mean, I tried my best, but yeah, John DeLancey was the only one who I was able to get to easily enough. Other people, again, weren't there or they showed up later. And at a certain point I was like, okay, I've seen all this con has to offer. I did check out some panels though.
Oh yeah.
They had a trivia contest. And by the time I got there, they already had all the entrances they did. But it was pretty interesting, pretty humorous. Uh-huh. They had people from NASA talking about the whole moon space station that's going to be there by the end of this year.
Cool.
And then they had the auction.
Yes.
John's favorite auction.
So you came with deep pockets, and the question is, did you leave with a bag full of loot?
Not a damn thing. No, that's not true. I did. Oh. I got my things.
Leave us in suspense.
All right. So I have a little bit of a Hamilton plate habit when it comes to like going to Star Trek conventions. It's very specific.
Sure.
So you know those plates that they advertise to you on TV?
Of course. Like, commemorative plates.
Commemorative plates. That? So I got a lot of four of them. For like $75, and the plates are the original Enterprise, the Enterprise D, which I gave to my buddy Jeff because that's Next Gen is his show. Plate for Star Trek IV.
Okay.
Right, it has Wells on it, so I thought that was kind of cool.
That's
cool.
But
the plate that I wanted was the Wrath of Khan plate.
Uh huh.
So I got that one too.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I was really happy with that. And then I also got, I didn't want to bid on a banner that had everyone's autographs because those were going for too high a price. But my favorite thing I got was an original series. Here, let me grab it. So when the original series first came out, you know, it was pretty much a hit, sort of. But the thing is that they wanted to put out a bunch of merchandise. The issue is they didn't have anything that was Star Trek related. So what they did was they just bought a bunch of different toys and they just slapped Star Trek stuff on top. So that's exactly what I bought here. I bought a Star Trek tracer gun. So if any of you remember those old disc shooting guns.
Sure, yeah.
And this thing is like amazing. It is absolutely beautiful with the like the old school retro packaging and stuff like that. So I got the tracer gun and jet disc for the tracer gun, like 100 disc or whatever. I bought this thing for like $50. And then my buddy Jeff was like, well, let me see how much it's selling on eBay. Why do you buy that junk? He sees it and it's worth like $300.
Hey, what a steal.
What a steal for something that is just so cool. It's killer. Absolutely love it.
And, well, that's awesome. You'll have to post to the Discord a picture of this amazing piece of merchandise that you lucked out with. Congratulations on your very cool collectible.
Yeah, I think I did pretty good with that one. They didn't have like everything that was just like super standout, so I got the stuff that I knew I'd get a big kick out of. Like you should.
Yeah. And absolutely.
And after that we went and grabbed lunch. I didn't buy any of the novelty drinks that they had. I think they had a warp core meltdown.
Sure. Sumerian Sunset.
Yes. And I forget the last one, but it sounded the worst because it was like whiskey and like vanilla liqueur, and I was just like, you're just, and fig, and I was just like, you're high and I'm not high enough. And then after that everything kind of settled down and we left. There were costumes. I saw a really cool Khan. That was pretty neat. A lot of Lower Decks costumes now,
and it's a great, very toyetic, great design, terrific. Yeah. To cosplay as, especially now that they did that crossover episode.
Exactly. I mean, those looked pretty clean and they were pretty easy to spot. And then, of course, you know, tried and true next gen outfits on people, you know, like they're just walking around. A lot of red shirts, if you know what I mean.
Sure. A lot of expendable fodder. I get it.
Yep, exactly. But that was my trek to San Francisco.
Well, fantastic. Not a long trek because you live in San Francisco, but yeah. Certainly still counts. Still counts. Don't say it doesn't count because it still counts. That's great. Can't believe it. You almost got the chance to meet Neelix, but maybe next time.
Well, they're coming back January, so I know where I'll be. That's at home. I mean, I'll be there.
Yep. At home. In spirit. At home. You'll be there in spirit.
Yeah.
It sounds cool though.
Yeah, it reminded me of like the conventions that I used to go to. you know, just in a hotel, just a couple of things, not a lot, but you just spend hours just trying to find every like nook and cranny. I think I've just finally kind of grown old enough where it's like, oh, this isn't a lot of stuff. And I really wish that they would like kind of produce more and do more for their fans, because if you're going to get anybody, get the Star Trek fans, because we all know they got disposable income.
Yeah, you know, we're just looking for stuff to spend our money on, truly. So this is just, you know, yours to lose, Paramount. So get on it. Get the merch out there. I don't care if there are complicated rights issues involved with this stuff. I want to buy more stuff. And that should be music to your ears.
Word.
But you know what? You know what, John? I've got a little bone. At the same breath, I have a little bone to pick with Paramount. Paramount has started doing a full, like, a minute and a half of commercials before every single thing you watch on Paramount Plus, and I have to say, boo! Boo! I don't care how many times you tell me about young Sheldon, I'm not going to tune in. Stop trying to make it happen. It's not going to happen.
Word. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Knock that out. I don't need 2 minutes worth of shows I'm not going to watch. You know I'm not going to watch because you got my algorithm, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
You
know what I'm watching here? Like, if you're going to target me with the stuff you know I'm going to watch, either After Midnight or Star Trek or Ink Masters. Those are the three things you should be targeting me with. Now, I don't care about Tracker. What's a Tracker?
What is this? What is this? We have Reacher at home. What is this? We have Reacher at home. They're trying to sell me Tracker. He's also a big guy, and he's gonna punch his way out of every situation. Tracker. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know Paramount Plus, but I pay for your premium tier, and then you're gonna make me watch commercials? No, thank you. I don't care. I don't care about how many seasons young Sheldon has. That's all I see. Tune in for the final season of young Sheldon. He says bazinga, we promise.
Does it happen at the end? It's like the last thing he says is bazinga.
No, they have like a clip from I don't know what season, but he's like bazinga. And everyone's like, fuck, yes. I forgot why I tuned in, but now I remember.
No shit, that's sad. I mean, that's cool. Glad you like it all. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, yeah, if you like it, yeah, go for it. This is like, if you like it, this is your renaissance. It's just Sheldon here and Sheldon there and Sheldon everywhere, because I hear through the grapevine of Sheldon news that they are going to be doing a spinoff of young Sheldon. That's right. It'll continue on. There will be the Sheldonverse continues to grow. And I, for one, say bravo. Bravo to you, creatives, who surely this is your passion project.
I would have never in a million years assumed that what the Big Bang Theory would ever have, like, a universe.
Yeah, and not even really the rest of the show. It's just one character. It really shows how much of that show that normal Sheldon carried on his shoulders.
I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean,
I've never watched it, so you tell me.
Me neither, and that's why we're still the pores, you know? We're not the people. We're not bathing in that Sheldon lucre that we could be if we just made something just extremely palatable. we don't know. We deride it. We say, boo, young Sheldon, I don't want to see commercials about you. But we're not out there creating the next, I don't care how old they are. We're not creating any sort of Sheldon, young, older, but anywhere in between.
Well, I guess.
We all have regrets. It's so true.
That's true.
But,
that's true.
And speaking of regrets, let's talk about Season 2, Episode 18, The Crossing.
Nice.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I believe this is our final Season 2 episode of Star Trek Enterprise that we are obligated to watch. I think we get to move on to Season 3 after this.
Thank the maker.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I believe I'm right. And if I'm not, it doesn't matter. We're doing it anyway.
Yeah, I got to move out of this season too. I need to see what season three brings because this episode was a thing.
It really was, John. And I have to say, I think this was one of those episodes of Enterprise that really let me down because it came to the table with a lot of interesting questions and then decided, hey, screw these. Let's throw them straight in the trash and let's just get back to the good old shoot 'em ups and punch 'em outs and weird helmet positions for Phlox.
Yeah, let's keep it sort of on. Then let's turn it. Let's put it all the way on. And yeah, this was a weird episode because I felt like you said, it could have been a pretty cool episode, and I think it had some elements to it that made it interesting. But then that really devolved really quickly.
And it opens with a pretty interesting premise, right? Basically the spaceship from Farscape sneaks up on the Enterprise while they're at warp and just gobbles it up.
Yeah,
there's really zero fight. They don't even try. They're just like, hey, well, that thing's gaining on us. Hail it. Oh, and we're inside.
Yeah, like a worm eating a, or a whale eating a smaller fish or something. No.
It did kind of look like a whale shark a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, even like that, or kind of like, whale shark slash like manta ray type of look, big gaping maw, something that you would immediately hit warp to get away from.
Yeah, but they're in warp and they can't, they're going as fast as they can. Yeah.
I thought then maybe I wasn't paying attention to them effects because they looked like they were just doing cruising speed, you know, like just chilling speed.
Yeah, well, you know when they go, like when they're just in warp, they have like the stars elongate and you see all the like the prismatic colors of them. That's how you can tell when they're in warp. I mean, that was what I remember. Because
I'm
they're just
trust
like
you on this one.
Because yeah, you would think if not, they would have been just like, punch a Chewie, I'm home.
Yeah, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Chewie, get us out of here.
Yep.
We gotta go.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good. To me, it was like a strong start for an episode. Like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah. But after the long road, we get the we're back from the theme song, and the weapons are offline. I think it was a very funny scene. Trip calls up to the bridge and is just like, "Oh, what's going on up there, Captain? The engines are broken." It's like, hey, isn't that your job? Shouldn't you be telling me why the engines are working?
Yeah, Trip was testing them. Yeah, that's it. Testing them.
Yeah. And basically, none of their sensors work. They can't figure out anything. And so Captain Archie has Mayweather bring up the backup camera. And they do a little zoom and enhance action. And they identify these little puffs of sick vape clouds that are just zooming around the
smell like blueberry crunch or something. Yeah.
Oh yeah. They all smell like they smell like blueberry and horrible, and they're just like they're just cotton wisps. Cotton. Yeah. That's right. Doing vape tricks in this gigantic cavernous ship. I have to say, in general, I really like the interior of this. I like the whole design of this alien ship, and I like that there's no record of it in the Vulcan database.
Yep.
And folks are just like, they are confused about what's going on, but there's one way to figure out, and of course in this world they're not going to be taking the transporters. No, they're going to take a shuttle pod down to the surface of this cavernous hangar and check it out up close, see what they can see.
It was very, I guess they're wisps, so they don't really need a lot of sitting space. I like the design of the cavern, but not so much like, I was looking for a little bit more texture, believe it or not.
Yeah, everything looks like it's kind of under glass, or ice, I guess is what it kind of seems like at first. But there are a lot of like interesting shapes and props that you're like, oh, that would be cool if I could see if they could interact with it at all.
I thought the strongest thing was actually, this is going to sound stupid, but the floor.
I agree.
It had a really interesting, like, almost like claw-like protrusions throughout the floors we're walking into. And it was also a pretty strong start for them to get in the shuttle, and they're wearing the suits and flying down. Like, you know, the few episodes we watch have been very, like, insular, or if not just inside the ship, it was also, like, in a cave or on another planet with that sort of a cave, or the, you know, the one war-torn planet that only had the one building. So I was like, okay.
That one.
I like that one a lot. I think, honestly, out of all the ones that we've watched from this season, that is probably the strongest one to me. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that it had Mr. Coombs in it.
Of course not.
But, yeah, in terms of them landing there, they're just trying to get, like, Data to kind of see what's going on. And that's when they noticed that the environment, which was toxic to them before, all of a sudden started changing to be more hospitable for humans to breathe.
That's right. Yeah, I think it's Trip who says somebody knows what humans like to breathe when they realize that the atmosphere is changing, and but they can't. They don't have a long time to ruminate on this because. That's when a weird one of these wisps comes down and goes into Trip's forehead, forcing like a puff of Lemon Pledge to come out.
That was a little yeah, it's a little weird. That whole blue comes in, yellow comes out.
Yes, when they this is the spoiler alert, but this is the aforementioned crossing. They reference multiple times in the episode ahead, and what it is these beings are switching place with the these crew members. They're becoming corporeal, and they were incorporeal before, and they're releasing these people's consciousness into incorporeal state. But of course, we don't know that yet. This point in the episode, they're just like, hey, are you all right, buddy? And he's like, yeah, but I was just, what did he say he was doing in this moment? He has a lot of, like, callbacks.
Was he, was this the one where he was, like, water skiing or barbecuing?
Well, he did that. The barbecuing is the last of his extrasensory experiences. This might be the situation where he is, hanging out with Butch Cassidy.
Yes.
Or
yes.
That might be later when his wisp friend is enjoying the food so much. But either way, he's got a lot of folksy sort of experiences that he goes and does while he is in the incorporeal realm. We get next a very nice. We expect it, I think, in every Archer or every Enterprise episode. And that's a decontamination chamber scene. The only thing here is that Trip is the only one in the decontamination chamber, and everyone else is just kind of talking about him outside of it. Something that he does bring up.
Well, I mean, when they're talking to you and all of a sudden it goes, that's pretty uncomfortable. That would make me question, like, am I dying? Is there something wrong
I can still
with
see
me?
Your mouse moving, Captain. Come on.
See, and that's why that type of deductive reasoning is why I feel Trip should have been the captain.
Trip's great. And Trip gets a lot of Connor Trinneer gets a lot of opportunities in this episode to kind of flex his acting muscles, and I'm glad to see it. But Phlox is gonna give Trip a clean bill of health. There's nothing wrong with them, and so he's gonna get back to work. Archer makes it clear when they're in the locker room that, hey, he doesn't want to send him back to work. In an ideal situation, he would have him under observation for a couple of days so they can make sure nothing bad has happened. But as we learned before, both of the engines are down. And I guess there are no other high-ranking engineers on the ship that can fill in if Trip's got a sick day. No, he has to get right back to work.
I know that pain. Sorry.
Yeah.
That was real talk. You thanks for bringing me there. Oh, jeez.
That's real.
Yeah, that is real. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I guess Malcolm is also, critical staff because he needs to get the weapons going. Archer's basically taking no chances here. There has been no real hostile action towards them, except that I guess they're imprisoned inside of this giant ship. But Archer's just like, well, so I started blasting.
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's the only way to get out of here, really. We just need to start shooting shit. So get them guns online as fast as possible, Malcolm. We need to get out of here.
So I think I still maintain the fact that I think Archer is one of the worst captains. Yep. But at least he is extremely consistent, because the next scene is in his quarters and T'Pol is coming to have a little confab with them. And Captain Archie is acting very dramatically, standing by the window, proclaiming that it's like they're in the belly of the beast. And T'Pol, I think, is, again, the voice of reason here and in pretty much every episode when she makes the point, hey, nothing bad has happened. So it's weird to assume hostile intent. And Archer, of course, what do you think he does? Does he take this advice and consider it? No, he gets immediately frustrated that someone who he's talking to doesn't agree with him immediately. And it's just like, get out of here.
Yeah, I think he's definitely on rage hall. I feel at this point, if I had to think about my shining stars from all the other episodes we watch as well, it is for sure T'Pol, Phlox, and Trip.
Oh yeah, there's some definitely bright parts in this show, no doubt about it. T'Pol, Jolene Blaylock is doing so much, and it's really acting her heart out every single episode. And so it's a joy to have her. But, like I said, at least Archie is consistent in his
terribleness.
Yeah. You know, there is something to be said about consistency. And I think we just got to give it to him. I want to shout out the next scene. The little elevator that Trip takes up is great. It reminds me of a small version of the elevator that goes into Ops and DS9. So, I love it. I love that it just comes out of the floor and doesn't make any sense. And they already have like a turbo lift. I don't care. It just like, it's great. I love that there's like a practical elevator in this set.
Yeah, you're not going to get any disagreements from me. I felt the same way when watching it. I was like, that's cool. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't really get all that much time to spend in the engine room because guess what? The entity's back.
Yeah. That pusher wisp.
That's right. The wisp goes in there and the Lysol comes out and all the engineering techno babble that this crewman Rostov is trying to say to not Trip. He couldn't give two shits about all this stuff because he's just like, okay, cool. I'm going to step through this tiny door. It goes somewhere. Goodbye.
I'm getting a little peckish.
That's right. I guess the kitchen's through this teeny tiny bulkhead. Goodbye. I was enamored with how small this door was.
It was a little small, but at least it feels practical for a starship. You know, like you're not gonna make giant doorways if you don't have to. If someone could float through it, so. Seeing him go through the tiny door, I was okay with.
It's the smallest door on the show. The other doors aren't this small. Well, I wonder, was he going to like a Jeffrey's tube? Like, I have to know what this whole deal was. Because if it's just like a tiny door that leads into a regular hallway, I've got questions.
Well, I'm going to liken it to the fact that the Lysol, the blue, the Fabuloso. Yeah, yeah. Fabuloso went blue, Lysol went out. Like, was pretty inconsistent on whether it knew how to tap into the host memories, right? Like, because sometimes it seemed like it had no concept of anything, and other times it had probably too much concepts and stuff that we'll kind of get into. So maybe it was just like, I have to go now. I just saw this tiny little door and thought that was the only way to get out of there. that was it. You know, I mean, it's a blue floating orb. Usually, they don't really look like they had any doorways except for its giant, like, opening maw type of thing on their ship. So,
right, that's a good point. They only have experience with sort of like a garage door or an opener type situation. Mm-hmm. So Krubin Rostov radios up to the bridge and lets them know, "Hey, Trip is acting weird, and he just left through the smallest door I've ever seen." And now T'Pol and Archer can't find Trip, so they go fetch Malcolm, and they come upon Trip in the galley, in the dining area of the Enterprise, and he's got all the best food, John. He's got a hot dog. Mm-hmm. He's got two pieces of what look like toast with nothing on it.
Yep.
He's got a root beer float with looks like ice cubes in it. Huh?
Yeah, well.
He's got spaghetti and meatballs, fried chicken and roast veggies, a green salad, and two kinds of juice and a water.
Yeah, I mean, look, anyone who's ever been to a buffet knows how it is.
Yeah,
that's just a buffet plate, really.
That's right. Yeah, that's a real. That's like that kind of spread is something you would get in the hometown buffet for sure. Oh, and yeah. Each one you'd be like, okay. Well, I guess I could go back to seconds technically.
Yeah, but do I want this one again? Yeah, let me go to the other side of the hometown buffet.
Yeah,
ooh, just, they have ramen now.
Don't do that.
Oh no, I know. I know better.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I know. I know better.
That's good. At least not Trip here. It did not take the open air, everyone sneezing into it ramen offered at the hometown buffet. T'Pol gets right to the point. Where is Trip? Because you're not him. This wispy life form is very much like, oh, he's in my realm. A non-corporeal realm where there are no rules and anything goes. Ladies drink free. this is basically Club Med as a reference people still get, right?
Totally. I'm sure they still exist.
It's
like look out my window hoping to see a Club Med ad fly by.
Is that true? Out of wow, and not only on the commercial, not only on like a website or a banner ad or the TV, no, you want like a banner carried by an airplane
or a person on the ground. Yeah, it says Club Med still exists. Don't forget, you can't afford it.
So Malcolm chimes in asking about Wisp's penetrating things, and it really makes me wonder if he needs to go back and delete his browser history ASAP before something happens, just or in case something does.
After this episode, for sure, better go delete some browser history.
Well, yeah, for what happens later, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what I mentioned before, Connor Turnier, just kind of musing over the word wisp was great. I thought it was really fun and a really kind of standout moment for Connor Turnier in this episode where he's like, wisp, wisp, yes, I like it, wisp, pa-pa-pa-pa.
Yeah, I'm glad we put a simple name to him, that's for sure.
Certainly, yeah. Non-corporeal beings would have been a little bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, exactly. You heard how I did the intro. You think I could say non-corporeal? Nope, not even gonna try it.
Let's not even try
it. Zoom tight. Been zoom tight.
So Archie really puts his foot down and says, hey, you're going to return, return Trip, and you're going to let us go. And the Wisp is like, all right, here you go. And basically does everything Archie asks right in that moment. It's then that the Fabuloso leaves and the Lemon Pledge returns and Trip is back to normal. But he has that real sort of like someone who has done a drug for the first time and wants everyone else and thinks everyone else should do it too. Have you ever tried this stuff? It's incredible.
I can't explain it. You should just try it.
I have so many good ideas.
Have you ever put gravy in a cup? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that good of an idea.
We're gonna open a restaurant. It's just drive-through gravy. And people are gonna hold their hands out. We'll take a ladle of gravy and just slop it in. People come from miles around. Jeez, Trip. Maybe you just need to go, hey, have some coffee, lock yourself in the room for a while.
Go sober.
But back in Archie's quarters, Archie's laying down a very self-aware Captain Starlog, you know, talking about how he's like, geez, I hope I'm not a real prejudiced jerk off. I hope that's not true. Anyway,
about to become one again.
But that's when Phlox shows up and confesses, hey, an alien tried to take over his body. But it really didn't work because of the mismatch in their physiology. And Phlox, I have to say, sells this line so well. The foreshadowing about this being an unwelcome, non-consensual thing is first floated. And then, you know, it kind of snowballs from here. But again, just an amazing, like, every time Phlox is on the screen, I am riveted. Just a wonderful performance.
Yeah, he kills it. Every episode we watch with him in it, where he's been a little bit more prominent, he kills it on this.
No exception here.
Yeah, and it was kind of nice to be like, yeah, no, these aren't good.
Like, yeah.
Probably not that great.
Yeah, Trip might be just like, you guys gotta try this! But it happened to me, and I didn't like it, and it was real gross. And so we cut down to what I am just going to call the torpedo room, because there's just a bunch of torpedoes in it. And, you know, Malcolm is doing his daily thing where he goes and coos to his torpedoes. How you doing, buddy? You want to get fired at someone and explode? Oh, I bet some Klingons out there are going to get real exploded with you. And when he's baby talking to his torpedoes, he realizes, hey, there's a wisp in here.
And boy, does he hustle and get the hell out of there.
Oh, he sure does. And he shoots it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to be credit. He was on the second floor of this torpedo room. He sees this thing. He does like the slide down the stairs, like a run over to the phaser, like the phaser pistol wall, grabs it. Yeah, just... like, I'm going to get it. Get.
Yeah. But it's I don't know. I guess he doesn't know what incorporeal means, because obviously the phaser does nothing. And this wisp quickly catches up with Malcolm and takes him over. And whereas the wisp that took over Trip filled him with wonder and a certain coquettish glint in his eye, this wisp just turns Malcolm into a real horny grosso.
This was the part, like, everything up to this part was fine.
Yeah.
It was whatever. But this part was just like, oh, you all lost, I think, the message you might have been trying to say. And this grossed me out. I not a fan. Not a fan of this whole part.
It's wildly uncomfortable. Because he kind of starts off his experience as a wisp-possessed crewman by leering like he invented it. He leers in a way where he might as well just be like, he might as well just have a bullhorn being like, I'm horny! the way he is drinking this female crewman in with his eyes. But that's not even half as bad as when he creepily jams open the turbo lift door so he can corner another female subordinate and be like, I notice we have a bunch of anatomical differences.
Yeah. Now the every part of this, from the turbo lift to then when we get to T'Pol's quarters, I just was like, ugh. I almost messaged you and be like, should I do another random roll?
Should we watch something else?
Yeah, because I was just like, come on. This was a potentially, like, interesting concept that you could have done here that still hits the message of, like, understanding what consent is, which I feel is the overarching one of the overarching messages of this episode could have worked a different way than just like this really creepy vibed Malcolm. And of course it's like Malcolm is the one who's the creepy kid, I guess, for some whatever reason. And this is the point where I'm talking about, I'm like, when we hear the Wisp before, they almost have like no concept of anything that we understand. But this one is all of a sudden, he's like, you are female. You are this. I'm like, when do you learn all this stuff? What happened, Wisp? What happened, Fabuloso? How do you learn all like, when did you realize this? When did you become creepy? And then it weirded me out that you could jam open a turbo lift door. I'm surprised that shit didn't cut his hand off. I got a lot of questions from this.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely kind of highlighted how light and sort of non-secure those doors were. But when he gets into T'Pol's quarters, like you said, it all goes downhill. It gets so creepy so fast. T'Pol is reading a book in what looks like, I don't know, where they're like, yeah, you have to sit like this because of the framing. She's like, I don't think T'Pol or anyone would ever sit like this, but too bad. And he... Malcolm is like, hey, did you know you're like the hottest chick on this whole starship? And now that may be the case. I mean, Julian Blaylock is a true beauty, but Malcolm has seen three people. Unless there's only three. I mean, we know there's more than three women on the ship. So because he's a Fabuloso cloud, does he just not understand like how many, like he can't count or what?
I don't know. Like, I literally wish I knew. It would not support the scene for me in any way, shape or form. This was just bad. Just a bad call, badly written, bad everything. Full stop for me. But like, I kind of wish that like, it felt like every time one of the Fabuloso clouds entered you, you would like, they would pick up more of like understanding what like humans are, or, like, you know, humanoids in this instance are. And then at least maybe try to explain how they're kind of adapting. Cause I mean, like the first time Trip gets hit, this thing is just like, you know, it's like sure. Me looking at the Ike's menu, trying to figure out what sandwich I want to order. I'm just drooling out my nose. And now this one is also, you are a female. We should hang out together. And by hang out, I mean do things that I really have no concept of before, but I all of a sudden want to do them. It's so off-putting.
Truly.
Sorry. Truly off-putting.
And luckily, Archie gets there just in the nick of time and is, I think, appropriately surly in this situation.
Yep,
he makes it clear to this Fabuloso cloud that that humans don't like doing things without their consent. Though he does not mention Vulcans. Like, I have to assume that he's including that in that statement, too. But he's just like, humans don't. Vulcans, I don't know. Anything goes. I don't care.
I'm gonna assume he's covering the board on this one. Lord, I hope he's covering everyone on this one.
But he doesn't really make that distinction. But the Malcolm is not returned in this scene. They just lock him away in quarters, and basically just take him out of the episode for the rest of the time. And that's great because I can't stand to look at him anymore. He's such a perv.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so he, Archer radios to the engine room, really relays the situation to Trip and, you know, piles on the urgency. And just as they are about to, get things really going in the engine room, crewman Rostov is then possessed by a Wisp and they realize it is getting out of hand. Things are going south fast. So Archer comes up with a brilliant plan. They need to figure out who is it, who isn't a Wisp. And then we're going to lock him in a room. And then we're going to get out of here. Foolproof.
I mean, yeah. Foolproof. Like, you're not really trying to explain how you're going to get him back, but I guess keeping them in their quarters works.
So this is where the episode takes a turn for me, because the start of the episode really, it presents an interesting proposition. These are non-corporeal beings. They obviously can, they can impart upon you experiences that you, you know, might be a memory, might be a wish that you could have experienced. Like, you can do all these amazing things and be everywhere at once and really have these transcendent experiences. And it's clear that they set up that Trip is, it enjoys them and does it and thinks everyone should try it out. And so they have this interesting question. What if there are certain crew members who want to become, they want to trade places? Like, are, is there a world in which this can be explored? And they completely, at this point, they completely flip the switch. Obviously, we've been shown enough really deplorable and creepy behavior by the Fabuloso Clouds that we're not going to be on their side anymore. But now they're just like, hey, we have to just like, it's basically the thing at this point, where they have to determine who's been infected. And then they have to save the rest of the crew. Because, of course, the background thing here is that they are floating dead in space and unable to move anywhere because of what's going on with the engines. So there's several ticking clocks, and they, and the threat of them, you know, this the possession spreading becomes a real, it becomes basically the main threat. But they never revisit this, the idea of that the what these creatures offer could be actually something that is enticing for people. And that was really the question that I was looking forward to interrogating a little bit. And they just completely, they leave that by the wayside, unfortunately.
That's, yeah, exactly. Again, this whole premise seems pretty cool, but then it's just like, nah. Let's just, you know, they're just evil for kind of evil's sake. Like, you kind of learn why they need to take over, why they're so insistent in taking over these bodies and stuff like that. But at the same time, after, like, the Malcolm thing for me, and then kind of going from that next set, I was just like, I don't really care. And the concept isn't like, they didn't even have the duality of some of the crewmen going, I experienced this after, say, the Fabuloso leaves. They didn't even have some of the, oh my God, it was the most amazing thing ever, kind of causing some sort of dissent within the crew, which I think could have also been a little bit more interesting angle.
Absolutely. Can you imagine if someone was like, oh, I saw my, you know, my dead father, and I've always wanted to meet him, and it was like, it was as real as I'm talking to you. It's like everyone has their own little mini Nexus ribbon, like in Star Trek Generations, and they just are uninterested with that question at all. They're like, oh, all right, so now we'll just basically do the thing. We'll have Phlox determines, he develops on the tricorder an easy way to find out who is infected and who isn't, or who is possessed and who isn't. And he literally says, like, oh, it was a lot easier than I expected. Like, nothing, they don't have to try things twice or, like, come up with alternate plans. They basically, at this point, like, they basically start this plan in motion. And then it kind of works out. There's a couple hitches along the way, but Meriwether discovers that if you go up into the catwalk inside of the nacelle, there is a osmium alloy that is in the that is shielding it that the wisps can't get into. So Archer orders all crew people up into the nacelle and transfers command function up into the nacelle. And then it's just a matter of Phlox, who can't be infected, donning a pressure suit and then going down there. And they spend a ton of time talking him through the various complex things that he has to do to vent gas into the rest of the ship so they can knock out, render unconscious all the people who have wisps in them and basically scare the wisps out and then, I don't know, get out of there is, I guess, the plan, because polarizing the hull plating did not work.
Didn't do anything, and, you know, maybe it'll take Starfleet another 50 years to make the ship out of more of that stuff, so no more wisp attacks.
Nope. There is a fun scene where T'Pol is like, hey, I've got the superior Vulcan mind. I'm going to go down there and try to tussle with one of these Fabuloso clouds, and they're not going to get my lemon pledge out of me. No, sir. So she leaves the nacelle, but they like didn't have the footage of her climbing down. So it's just the footage of her climbing up the ladder into the nacelle, but reversed. And you can tell by how like her hands come off the rungs.
I was like, you would have fallen and eaten shit if you would have done it that way. Yep.
It's so bizarre. It's like, I don't know if we needed that scene, but it's like, yeah, this will work. They'll never figure it out.
Yeah, it's like, it'll be 480p forever, ever, 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 ever. Yeah, standard def my ass. Yeah, no, you're right. That was, I the first time I saw it, I was like, eh. But then, you know, a little bit of rewind, I was like, oh, that doesn't look right. So, yeah, you're right. It's weird.
Yeah, and they try to build tension by, like, several people asking where Trip is, and no one can figure it out. And then, like, as they're discussing their plan, he's just in the background.
He's just chilling. He's
just standing there. He's like, uh-oh.
I'm like, how big is the stay cell? Like, I feel like you'd probably be able to find him pretty quickly.
Seriously, the ship has never felt smaller than it does in this episode, which I guess is the point, because it's not supposed to be a very big ship. 82 people on board is what we find out is the crew complement of this version of the Enterprise. But
true.
There's some great scene up in the nacelle where it takes Mayweather way too long to figure out what's going on.
It's true.
Trip could not be acting more suspiciously, and Mayweather's like, hey, where are you going? Hey, why'd you push that person to the ground?
Hey, why are you now running from me? Hey, come back here, Tripper. You okay, Trip?
Why'd you punch me in the mouth?
It's okay. Did it happen by accident? Yeah, that was... I think you'd imagine that once they were all up in the nacelle, they'd be like, hey, look, these wisps are coming in and taking over people. If someone acts out of sorts, let us know.
Yeah, no one is ever really scared or concerned, I think, is one of the reasons why this episode really doesn't work for me. And there would have been great to have at least just one scene in the nacelle where, like, maybe it's uncomfortable. Maybe it's hot in the nacelle and people are sweating and they're getting annoyed and they are just, like, the paranoia is starting to really set in. Who could be a wisp? Like, there's none of that. There's, like, a couple of guys who are like, hey, how long do we have to be up here? Not too long? Okay, sounds good.
Thanks for the update.
That's right. Yeah. The stakes have never been lower.
Yeah, look, I don't want no Fabuloso flying into my brain. Well, that's not true. If it gets me away from paying rent and other real responsibilities, wisp me up, I guess, but...
Well, I have to say, like, so Phlox and Trip get into this great Star Trek fight, which you know Trip is going to lose, A, because there's more show, and then B, because Phlox is about to unleash a bunch of gas... Which this Fabuloso cloud, they have learned a lot about being human, but not enough to be just not like just huffing this gas as it comes in. He's like, what?
Also, I just assume, and probably wrongfully so, that all the aliens featured in any of Star Trek shows are going to be stronger than humans. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to look at Phlox and be like, oh, Phlox gets down. He ain't afraid to stop somebody if he
needs. He almost took Trip's head off with that piece of the hull plating that he took off. He, like, slams that down in a way where if Trip was anywhere near that, he would have lost something.
He swung that like a wrestler.
Yeah, he did.
You get hit with that was a chair shot. Yeah, he did swing that with a purpose. Right. That made... Phlox's spotlight become even bigger in my eyes. Like,
it really makes up for the fact that when he was fighting Hoshi earlier and she was doing those like toddler kicks in his sternum, like, get off of me.
Yeah, Phlox was like, nah, I ain't dealing with this. club.
And it's funny because, like, I also really love Phlox's performance in this. But also, like, his energy throughout the entire episode is just, like, exasperated dad, who is, like, you know, he's home for the weekend, and he has to do his daughter's birthday party all by himself for the first time, and he's just like, oh, I gotta do this now? Okay, I guess so. just there's never any, oh my God, we're running out of air or time or we'll never get our friends back. It's just like, it's very much like, oh, we got to deal with this now. That sucks.
My understanding is I did a little research and what it was that John Billingsley was just really tired of carrying the show on his back. And it was after this episode, it kind of showed.
Yeah. This is the time where the weight of the carrying the show for everybody is really bearing down on John Billingsley.
You could tell. He's like, oh, come on, man. Like, I'm the doctor. I'm supposed to doctor things. None of this. And here I'm doing karate and a bunch of other shit and fixing stuff and doing. But I enjoy. I at least had that to look forward to.
So we figure out what the aliens are basically like. We broke our ship. Listen, we can't fix it. Can we just take yours? They just want their idea is that 82 of them are going to replace the Enterprise crew and steal their ship, and then the rest of them will just wait till another ship comes along and do the same. And so at that point, Archie says, "You know what? First contact is out the window. Now we just get to do what. Now it's torpedo time." So once they have engines going, they just turn on the rearview camera and just pop a couple torpedoes right in the open maw of that giant ship, and it blows it to hell. He kills every last one of those Fabuloso clouds. I don't care how intangible they are. They are fudged.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And finally, Archer did something that I approve of.
Yeah, to this alien ship that there's no record of. This is the first time they've ever met anyone like him, and he's like, blast him out of the sky. And basically, well, here's the thing. Now, this is the final line in the episode where I feel like that this might actually be in favor of the Fabuloso clouds. When Trip finally returns to his body, he's just like, I was at the most glorious barbecue with the most ribs I had ever seen. And my ears really picked up at that moment. I was like, wait a minute. Fabuloso cloud, take me away.
So did Gwildor's.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, he went to Gwildor's cookout and it was amazing.
It's like,
yeah. Welcome, Trip.
You're finally home. What?
What?
What's that supposed to mean? Don't worry about it.
Wow, it's the most ribs I've ever seen, Captain. And then the actual line, the final line of the episode is Phlox saying, all right, we've got a lot of doors to unlock. And...
And I was waiting for the next... Exactly. I was waiting like, okay, we'll get a wrap up from Archer or something, but that's how it ended because they're like, oh, we have no way to get out of this.
Yep. They're just like, we got a lot of doors to open. God, I wish that was the
I wish that was too. Credits. I was like, you're doing them too much. You're giving them too much credit.
Yeah. And that's it. That's like an episode that started off with a bunch of interesting questions for us to answer and then rushed towards the finish line with a reckless abandon. Like, it was annoyed that it had to do the story as much as we were annoyed to have to watch it. I think I can guess, John, but did you like this episode of Star Trek Enterprise?
You know, after we you so wonderfully retold it and I got some time to think about it and sit with it, my feelings on it have not changed. Yeah, I did not enjoy it. Yeah, no. It was, again, the allegory for, you know, trying to understand consent, I think is something that a lot of people need to learn. And I think the message is strong. This episode, however, was not the way to go about doing it. They could have had a real... I think more powerful, poignant episode with this. It kind of starts strong, but yeah, it peters out real quick.
Could not agree more. John, unfortunately, I was actually excited partway through this episode because I thought we were going to get a doozy. The sets were cool. The ship design is neat. And it, like I said, the questions that it poses are at least interesting things to interrogate in the typical Star Trek fashion, but in the very not typical Star Trek fashion, they're just like, blast them. And then the fact that they didn't, like, they were just like, I don't know, it's like, I guess it's just an entry in their log and a bunch of space debris, but without finding anything else, they just blew it to shit. I guess it's just like, this is Archie's style, but man, was it just like, it didn't feel like a Star Trek episode at all. This felt like a, you know, a Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda episode or something.
Yeah, but even then,
I feel like it's probably missing out on some of it.
Yeah, it was. It's a weak episode. Good start, but weak episode.
Yeah. Well, that's gonna do it for us this week. Hard to imagine. We're back in the swing of things, back to Pop Saga, but the episode is already over. But do not fret and do not cry. I was actually thinking about the Batman, because we got some bad The Batman news this week, but that's not for this episode. Tune in to our Discord and talk, commiserate with us for the sad news about The Batman Part 2 being delayed. But that is not what we are here to talk about. We're here to talk about everyone's favorite part of the show. That's right, the outro. First up, we got to thank Burton M6 for all the incredible music on our show. Thank you for this theme song. I love it. It's always a delightful surprise when it comes on, and you can see how much talent is on display. Check out our show notes for a link to Burton M6 Fiverr page, and so you can check out all the wonderful services that he provides to you for a very reasonable fee. In addition to that, you can always reach out to us and contact us and have a fun chatting with us. And the best way to do that is our Discord, which you can get to through our show notes. And there are links to our other socials as well. I mean, those are fine. But the Discord is where the party is. Come join the Pop Saga Pals and talk about all this stuff. We talk about almost every single episode, and then also just stuff that's going on that you want to talk about. You have nowhere else to talk about it, or maybe you just like talking with us. Doesn't matter. Come join us on the Discord. Before we say goodbye, we have to say what we say at the end of every episode. And that is, we hope that wherever you are, however you choose to listen to us, that you're feeling happy and healthy. And if you're not, that's okay too. But without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to John for the final word.
Remember, folks, don't forget Florida, Captain. I don't care how far away it is. I was there.
Woo! Thank you for tuning in, cause you're part of the crew. Every episode, giving you something new. Jayco, let's go. I be yelling, yes, sir. Feeling like a captain. That's Picard and Kirk. Star Trek, Saga, Saga. Come on. Woo! This is Star Trek, Saga, Saga. Let's go.